Hey, good morning, guys. Welcome to this workshop. My name is John Siepen, and I'm going to be the presenter. I'm going to kind of ramble on a little bit here, but what I'd like to do is just, let me just read Psalm 26. Let this psalm kind of wash over us a little bit today. And I'm going to read it in the Amplified. Is that okay? I could. Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity. I have expectantly trusted in, leaned on, and relied on the Lord without wavering, and I shall not slide. Yeah, we need to be reminded of this. Integrity, key. Examine me, O Lord, improve me, test my heart and my mind. For your loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in your truth faithfully. I do not sit with false persons, nor fellowship with pretenders. This particularly hits me hard because I have, in my life, I have lived like a pretender at times. More often than at times, that's a qualification. I mean, deception. I grew up in deception. I embraced it. I hate the company of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. This, if this is a battle cry psalm of the heart and truth and integrity, this is it right here, Psalm 26. I will wash my hands in innocence and go about your altar, O Lord, that I may make the voice of thanksgiving heard and may tell of your wondrous works. Lord, I love the habitation of your house and the place where your glory dwells. Old Testament, right? Psalm of David. However, just think about it. John talked this morning. Everybody in this room reflects the glory of God. Do we believe it? I don't know. Too much of what we do today is up here. Let me just finish the psalm. I easily get distracted, by the way. Try to stay on my time. But in the place where your glory dwells, that, you know, David is saying that. It's just, I'm going to say more about that. Gather me not with sinners and sweep me away, not with them, nor my life with bloodthirsty men, in whose hands is wickedness, and their right hands are full of bribes. But as for me, I will walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be merciful and gracious to me. My foot stands on an even place. In the congregation will I bless the Lord. It doesn't stand on a crooked place, on an even place. By the way, everybody in this room has been wounded in your life. If you don't believe that, then you need another workshop. Everybody's been wounded, but let me say this. Out of our woundedness, we have wounded other people. Now, here's the problem. Because of who I am, I have spent 20 years of my life as a high school teacher and coach. When I say coach, people think, they look at my size and think, you know, football. But unfortunately, it was swimming. I swam in college. It would be like a division level 3, if you will. But that's where you show up and you know, if you have a test or something, you tell a coach you can't practice that day. It's no big deal. You're not going to lose your scholarship. Let me just say this to you. As a father of 3 sons, I have wounded my sons. I have wounded them. I want to say this to you, that out of our woundedness, we wound. And so that's what I really want. I want to bring about an awareness today of being wounded. And also an awareness of how we have wounded our sons and or have been, you know, or others. So let me just say that we can err on either side. And where I was going earlier, the other 27 years of my life, I've spent as a marriage and family therapist. And I have, within my field, within our field of, you can call it soul care, spiritual direction, whatever, you'll see that you work with people's wounds, and you can err on either side, but if you don't deal with a wound, and you start telling people how they need to live their life and how they're sinning, you can't. It just doesn't work that way. You know, you've been wounded and you wound. And so there's a responsibility side, there's a repentance side, if you will. as I talked about that psalm that I read this morning, let me just read this quickly to you, because John alluded to. In John 16:33, Jesus said, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have perfect peace and confidence. In the world you will have tribulation and trials and distress and frustration." We've all experienced that, right? But be of good cheer, take courage, be confident, certain, undaunted. For I have overcome the world. I have deprived it of power to harm you and have conquered it for you. Isn't that powerful? John 16:33 in the Amplified. Now, when Jesus had spoken these things, the high priestly prayer, he lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, "Father, the hour has come. Glorify and exalt and honor and magnify your Son, so that your Son may glorify and extol and honor and magnify you. Just as you have granted him power and authority over all flesh, all humankind, now glorify him so that he may give eternal life to all who you have given him." And this is eternal life. It means to know, to perceive, recognize, become acquainted with, and understand you, the only true and real God, and likewise to know him, Jesus, as the Christ, the Anointed One, the Messiah whom you have sent. I have glorified you down here on earth by completing the work you have given me to do. At my age, my great desire is to finish my life remaining faithful to his calling. That's my signature when I sign my name, mostly, but I just put the beginning letters. You know, remaining faithful to my calling. But we have been called to be fathers and husbands and grandfathers. How many grandfathers here? Yeah, I've got 6 grandkids and 1 in the hopper, and oh boy. You know, it's hard to keep up with all of the grandkids. And I wanted to take off from where you were, John. As John was speaking, imagine for all time, God stood before a big mirror. He shattered that mirror in his image. Every one of us is one of those pieces. We bring a unique, and John mentioned this, bring a unique part of God's glory to this world. And what my dear friend said this morning is our enemy, really, it's the reflection of God's image in us that he wants to destroy and blot out. In the Amadeus thing, it just breaks my heart, because I have a son who's a musician, and just the insidiousness of that man and what he did in the wickedness. Unbelievable. Anyway, so we are created, and so the enemy is out to destroy that part that we bring. And we need to bring it into whatever part of the continent you are in right here, in the U.S., wherever it is. We've been called into this time, space, and history to bring that glory. And John's going to talk more about what happens this afternoon in that. And I don't want to necessarily go there. So what are we to bring, gentlemen? What are we to fight for? This is all introduction, John. Let me just turn there real quick. Let me find some things here. Isaiah 61 is what we're to fight for. Most of you know this, I'm sure. But I want to say it again. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed and qualified me to preach the gospel of good tidings to the meek, the poor, and afflicted. He has sent me to bind up and heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the physical and spiritual captives, in the opening of the prison and of the eyes of those who are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord, the year of his favor, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant consolation and joy to those who mourn in Zion, to give them an ornament, a garland, or a diadem of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, the garment expressive of praise instead of a heavy, burdened, and failing spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, lofty, strong, and magnificent, distinguished for uprightness, justice and right standing with God and planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. They shall rebuild the ancient ruins, and they shall raise up the former desolations and renew the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations. That was Jesus' call. It was his first sermon. There's brokenhearted out there. There are women out there that are being abused. Phoenix ranks as one of the at the top of the whole slave trade, the whole sex slave trade stuff. We're called to fight darkness, gentlemen, and I'm afraid that sometimes, and this is not meant by any slam, although it may sound that way, yeah, it's kind of fun to run, carry your canoe, and shoot elk. That's good. I like that. I mean, I don't do that, but I mean, I can get that. But I think God's called us to fight darkness. We live in a very dark time, a time when masculinity is being attacked at every turn. We're called to be men. We're called to stand. I challenge you to that. I'm 68 years old. I just had a major healing with my youngest son. So can I say this to you? It's never too late. Never too late, guys. How does woundedness take place? On your papers there, let me just say this. I'm going to run through some stuff, but I have a sergeant at arms here somewhere. Is he here? Yes, sir. Just let me know. I don't want to talk more than 35 minutes, but... I want to talk about some of the categories of woundedness that we may have come through as young men and as we were growing. That means not physically present. When you think of a father not being physically present, what comes to your mind? Just shout it out. No, not physically present.
He left.
He left. He left. What kind of homes are out there today?
Single-parent homes.
Who leads those homes? Moms. John Eldridge says, what? Who can hand the mantle? Who can hand the mantle to the sons? A man. Thank God for other men who step in, right? Where's the man here who's taking care of his grandfather, taking care of his son? Yes. Thank you. You know, when you think of that, we have that. And I distinguish between a physically present in the home from the next category, which is on your sheet, which says, Papa, Papa, and November Tango there. I mean, physically present, but not engaged. Physically present, not engaged. What does that mean? I'm one of those kids. I'm one of those kids. Let me tell you a story. I'll tell you the deal here. I was counseling with a guy in town, and he was court ordered to be involved with another therapist for group stuff that they had to do. This is all about the parenting thing, and custody is a mess. But there was this therapist, I say his name, David Feigenbaum, who did a lot of great things with men. And one of the things he would do is get fathers and sons. He'd take them on a weekend. And he's not a believer, but what he would do is he lined up whatever number of fathers he had, that number of buckets of tennis balls. And then he said, you know what, guys? Son's over here. Dad's over here. I want you to play catch for the next hour. Even as I say those words right this moment, I feel something in my heart. That never happened with my dad. That never happened with my dad. My father was physically present, not engaged physically with me. I taught my brother how to play catch. I played catch with my brother. I was his father. Is that sick? I don't know if the right word, give me another word, but it's sick. Yeah, he went on to play high school baseball, a starter. Was very good. But my dad never saw him play. So that hurts. Let's go play catch. Wow. I was at a retreat that I do with some guys in down in an abbey near the Mexican border, Catholic abbey. This is like the castle here. But some guys on one of the breaks, they were playing catch. It always gets me. It always gets me. That's that category, okay? Let me go on and talk about another category down at the bottom of your page there. It says a PPE, physically present and engaged. Well, I was going to be the father who, you know what? I'm going to be engaged with my sons. Okay. And I did. What does that mean? That means taking your sons, and again, I'm talking about sons, and I know some of you have daughters. I will get to that a little later, okay? So stay with me. My middle son, Joel, who's an entrepreneur, buys and sells houses and buys apartments and fixes them. But him and I, when we had to fix the roof in this house we lived in, it was always leaking. I would take Joel up on the roof with me, and we'd repair the roof together. You're going to go to the hardware store? Take your son. That means physically present, but you're engaged. You know, take him or her with you. Well, let me give you an example of a guy that I was counseling recently, and we were getting into a relationship with his son, and I said, oh, tell me how that goes. Well, pretty good, but, you know, we just don't do much together. And I said, well, tell me about that. And so what he said was, I play golf and tennis, but he doesn't like to do those things. But if he wants to have time with me, he's going to have to do these things. A father said this. Tell me what goes through your mind when I say that.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. Anybody else?
Selfish.
I got some young guys in here. Give us some truth, guys.
It should be the other way around. He should be finding stuff to do with the son that his son likes to do.
Likes to play chess. He likes to hike. His dad said, no way, I'm not doing that. I said, well, can we talk more? No, I don't want to talk about it. Okay, well, lost that client. Okay, not quite. We did stay. He did relent, actually. But he did leave at that time. Where are we? One of the books out there is Parenting Adolescents. Okay, let me tell you something. If you're really you're serious about wanting to be a dad, this isn't about adolescence. This is about general parenting. If you're really serious, if you really mean business, you spend some time going through this methodically with your wife, or if you're by yourself. It's a hard read. This is a hard read. Tell you up front. And it's a 5-mile hike uphill all the way. I mean, this is a hard read. And in here, he talks about the non-reflective parent. The non-reflective parent. David was right. This man wasn't reflecting on anything. The non-reflective parent. If he would have thought, he'd go, wow, you know, my son doesn't know what's going on. I wonder what's going on here. I would imagine all of us in here are non-reflective. We tend to react toward our kids on automatic. We do not reflect. Let me just say this to you. Let me give you another example. Here's a young girl who is 14 years old, she goes to a school in our city, they have a prom coming up, and I'm going to say, if you're 9th grade through 12th, you can go to the prom. And she's talking to her mom about, you know, my best friend, she was just elected freshman class prom queen, and three guys have asked her to the prom, and but this keeps going on, you know, she keeps bringing it up. And her mom begins to explain to her, because she says, is this hard for you? And, well, you know, she didn't even say, is it hard for you? She was listening to her daughter, well, you know, you're only a freshman. That's what she said. You're only a freshman. It really isn't a big deal. If you were a dad and your daughter kept bringing this up about the prom and not being asked, you're only a freshman, and, you know, come on, let's. What would you want to say to her? Maybe. Later. What would you want to say to her initially?
Sorry.
Okay. What are these? You want to tell her she's beautiful. What were you feeling as I was sharing the story, though, for her? She wants to go. Question would be, honey, sweetheart, what's this been like for you? What, talk to me a little bit about how you're feeling. And then you want to follow that with, you know, with your statement maybe somewhere. But the issue is to reflect what's going on inside of her, right? You reflect it. You saw that she was feeling not beautiful, right? Not desired. What does a young girl, 14 or 15, want to know? And even our wives, they want to know that they're desired. Right? Precious. Desired. She was sitting in my office. I know the family well, but they came to see me professionally. And I said, well, you've been through some of our training. Reflect a little bit about what she might be feeling. Put yourself in her shoes. Oh, okay. Honey, tell me what this is like for you. Oh, my gosh. Don't explain to her about you're only a freshman. See, we react that way. And look, what I want us to do is think a little bit more deeply about life. We want to look down here below the waterline, not up here at that's how she's behaving or behaving in front of me. Let's just deal with, you know, that. Let's not deal with her heart. We've got to deal with the heart. And so anyway, that's that piece. The other category that I have there is NEP, not emotionally present. Not emotionally present. Let me give you another story. A father who's not emotionally present. Now, as you're listening to me talk, pay attention to what's stirring in your own heart. Because if you don't, that's my goal. I can't demand it, but I want you to pay attention. Here's a story. I was assistant principal at Miami High School near Loeb, Arizona. It's a mining town, very tough town. I had a young man I got really close to. He was a newbie, meaning he came into town. His dad was an engineer at the mine, good quarterback, but he had to play behind another guy. They ran a wishbone offense. This kid had an arm. 185, 6'2", a rock. We played our rival Globe. He had to be put into service because of some things that happened in the game to the other quarterback. We ended up losing a very close game, and I was walking up the hallway right by the locker room, and I got this horrible glimpse of this father grabbing his son, punched him right here, and said to him, "You screwed up. You screwed up." He was already an outsider. Even though he's a great athlete, that was his in, but he wasn't part of that community. You screwed up. This guy was a brilliant engineer. By the way, he was physically engaged with his son, a lot of activities, sports and all kinds. He was engaged with his son there, but he was not engaged here in the heart. Okay, fast forward, two more weeks go by. The kid walks in my office. He's struggling at this school. He's struggling. He walks in my office, closed the door, said, "Pull the blinds." I said, "Okay." He sat down. He started to weep. He said, "Look, I have screwed up, but it's not about football. My girlfriend's pregnant." She was also a girl who, I don't know, it was the weirdest story. I can almost write a book about it. She, although from that area, she was shunned for whatever reason. They were really pushed together. I don't excuse that, that they had sex, she got pregnant. I tried to help them walk through. It was difficult. This guy missed his kid's heart. He missed his heart. That's a long story that went on for a long time, and I tried to be helpful, and it did end in divorce. It ended in real tragic stuff. Now, again, he made his choices based on wounds, right? But still, that's an example of a father who, yeah, he was there with his son. They did things together, and he did things his kid liked. But he didn't. But again, it was life became about performance. So the other category, of course, is being emotionally present. What does it mean to be emotionally present for either your son or your daughter? What's that look like, do you think?
You do more listening than talking.
Very good. More listening than talking. Okay? There's more to be said here.
It's the point you realize...
I need to ask what's going on before I give advice to help.
That's hard, isn't it?
It's that point you realize.
Sounds like you've been there.
I have a
5-year-old. They're younger, though. Yeah. Okay, good. Other comments?
When you actually own slick hair.
What's that look like? Tell me. You're a young guy. How old are you?
I'm 20.
Okay.
When you actually...
Talk to me as a dad. Tell me. Talk to me as a dad.
When you take the time to see what I'm interested in, to see what... when you pay attention to my accomplishments, when you...
Keep going.
When you show that you actually see value in me.
Now, pretty powerful, huh? Another story. My middle son, Joel. Brilliant kid. Graduated from the high school in town that only 1% of the kids get into, or 1%. What is it, John? I don't know. University high school?
Less than 1%.
Yeah. He's brilliant. He's the kid. He's the ace. Yeah. Did I go to his basketball games? You bet. I was there. Did we fix the roof together? You bet. Was there. You know what his story is to me? Before I came here, I've been involved with my sons over time. I said, I'm doing this thing with this men's conference. I'm a little nervous about it. I don't like to share, but God says you need to do that. So, but Joel said to me, Dad, I mean, he said this before, but he reiterated this again in a different context. He said, when you would walk by my room at night, I would so want you to come in and see how I was doing. And I would walk by the room. Okay? And where did I screw up with my son there? All three of my sons got a different part of me. My oldest son, who's a pastor right now, got the best part of me. My second son, him and I say this to my shame. So, we did not talk very pointedly about the whole sexual part of life. And him and I recently even had a talk about how painful that was for him. To really sit and have honest conversation about that. You know why? You know what my sin was? I was more interested in being comfortable because it was very uncomfortable. I didn't know what to do. I felt extremely inadequate. I had my own stuff and my shame about that. Growing up in a home where my dad left pornography out, not Playboy or any of that, but those racy novels. And my mother and him would fight over it. And then began the problems with, because I grew up as a good little Catholic boy, masturbation, that stuff. That became a chronic problem. So I had so much shame about all that I never talked to my young son about. And it's not about, you know, when I came to Christ and I was around the navigators, I kept, where's that book? I didn't know how to get into the heart of anything. Not until I trained under Dr. Larry Crabb at age 41. He looked me in the eye because you're basically in soul care all year. He says, you are a pre-adolescent emotionally. And he didn't mean that, you know, bad. He wasn't beating me up. I was a mess. But my son was deeply wounded and has struggled. I have permission to share this. He struggled with pornography for a while when he was at Oklahoma State. He's walked through a lot of that. He's, you know, and him and I have had some long talks about that. He also is the son that said, I don't know who in the hell you are, but I want to know you. He was getting some help through a friend of mine. She actually worked for us, our little counseling agency. And she says, you know, are you willing to spend time with your son? And I said, yeah, I am. I asked Joel if he was. And so we spent the next year meeting mostly every week. Hearing my story, talking about where he was and the pain in our relationship. A clue should have been gotten by me. He read two major volumes on Vietnam. I was there in 68. I'm not the John Wayne hero guy. Yes, I was in some dangerous things, but he wanted to know me. I had to get permission from Patty to talk about a couple things. It had nothing to do with her. Well, as my confession, I pray that this is sinking a little bit, guys. If you look at your chart there, I want you to look at it in this way. I wrote everything out. On the left there, you have a physically present but not engaged father. And we're going to look at that first left quadrant. And you have a non-emotionally present. Okay? Okay, not emotionally present and not and physically present but not engaged. And so I've titled that two things. What comes out of that? The abandoned son. That was me. I was the abandoned son. My dad was a hard worker. 43 years in the steel mills of Youngstown, Ohio. Worked another job as a sign painting business. I never saw him hardly much at all. At 13, I left. Physically, I was there, but I was gone. I trained at the YMCA every day. Every day I could, 6 days a week. If it wasn't for other men in my life, I don't know what would happen. But the abandoned son or the unprotected daughter. The unprotected daughter. Let me say this. Being an abandoned son is very, very lonely. Loneliness, that kind of loneliness. Let me give you an example of what I mean. True story, looking out the kitchen window, Ohio. Dad, can we talk about college? Son, whatever you decide to do, I'm for you. I'm behind you. Could you make sure that the front yard and backyard are taken care of today? And he went downstairs to work because he painted signs. What goes on inside you when I say that? I use myself as an example because I've used other people as examples and other people know who they are. There's only 6 degrees of separation, gentlemen. What goes on inside you? He's for me, right? What do you think I was feeling as a kid? Well, I'm not a kid. I'm a senior in high school. On my own? Yeah, you bet. I wanted some guidance. I wanted some help. What else? What was I feeling in my heart? He didn't care. Yeah, I don't know. I think I mask it, but I think down deep I was hurt. I was angry. I was scared. I was afraid. You know what loneliness is the soil of? Loneliness is the soil of addiction. Pornography, alcohol, drugs, sex, porn, whatever. I'm one of those, huh? 8 years alcoholic. 8 years. By my definition, when you're drinking every day and you're buzzed on about 8 ounces of scotch, you're an alcoholic. My year back, after I came back from Vietnam in 69, I drank every day until I came to Jesus. And after I came to Christ, I still struggled because I didn't know I needed to work through all the other crap. But I tended to be pretty easily, I don't know if this is necessarily true of everyone, but a person like this tends to leave home early. I left home because I couldn't really leave physically, but I left home. I was very ashamed of my home. My dad provided. He did, you know, he was also an alcoholic, but not the kind that was irresponsible. Very responsible. And so I interviewed. I don't have any daughters. Okay, I'm sorry. I mean, if you do, it's great. We have a young woman living in our home. We often had people living in our home. Her name is Lydia. And I queried her the other day, and she said, the unprotected daughter. She looked me in the eye and says, I know about that. The unprotected daughter, it's lonely. And a lot of gals seek boys, seek relationships to fill the gap. Because she said, John, we're thirsty. We're thirsty for that dad to be present. You know what some gals tell me when they turn 14? Why does dad not hug me or hold me? And fathers back away from daughters when they get into puberty. And the girls need to know they're loved. They need to have that physical presence. A young woman coming out of this type of home is very, very, very vulnerable to really bad relationships. And the message is, you're not loved. You're going to find, you know, everybody's thirsty. Do you understand thirst? It's a biblical category, by the way. Most of us don't think in these categories. Thirsty? When Jesus in John 7:37 yelled out, he yelled. He screamed. He hollered. If anyone is thirsty. What was he talking about? Water? Did you ever think about that? What was he really talking about? Was he talking about water? But what would you say he's talking about?
You're missing something that you need.
Yeah? More? What's he talking about? He's talking about things like, how many of you guys ever hit a home run in a game? Maybe not. Throw a touchdown pass. Never do that stuff. Well, what gives you a sense of a home run? Think about it.
Victory.
Yeah. Or a boss saying, great job, good job. Winning a soccer game. That was, you know, we like, that's as men, we want to know that we're having an impact in our world. But we also, as a young boy, I want to know, did my dad really care about me? I'm thirsting for someone to care, to love me unconditionally. These are the things Jesus was talking about. Things of the heart. Does God fill the gap? Does God fill the gap? You know, he can, and he does. So do you feel like you have a little bit of an idea of the abandoned son, the unprotected daughter? My Uncle Steve, a Korean War veteran, Purple Heart, the day before I went to Vietnam, before I flew out, he shows up in the driveway. My family didn't talk about it. There was absolutely no discussion. Literally, no discussion. He shows up. I run out to see him because we have a history. He saw the abandoned boy. He took me to football games and to watch his favorite high school team where he graduated, East High School in Youngstown. And we would sit there and he would explain what was going on. Is there something wrong with this picture? My Uncle Steve and I had a football game. What's wrong?
It's good enough to slide.
I like the word you use. You're right. He's picking up the slack. He was. He saw something, didn't he? What did he see?
He saw that you had a need.
He saw that I had a need, that I was a kid who was, my dad wasn't there. And so he shows up in the driveway and he gives me a big hug. Now, I never saw anything like he did, but he just said, keep your head down, kid. By the way, that's good advice. In any firefight, keep your head down. Give me a hug, and he was off. He was a blue-collar guy all the way. I'm all for that. I grew up in a blue-collar town, you know, shot in the beer. That's how I grew up. And he went off to his day job. And that was it. But God, as I was writing my God story, I realized, thank you, Lord, did you tell him to come by? And this is what I heard from God. Yeah, he's the only one that will listen. You know, now whether Michael Steve knew Jesus, and it was all ex post facto, I wish he died before I could ever go back and thank him. That's a great sadness on my part, but I thanked his widow. Oh well. I mean, does God provide people in the gap? I was telling John on the way up, one other thing, story, I don't want to get too carried away, but I want to give hope here a little bit that God does provide people. When I was, we have the college story. I was at a football camp. I was at a camp, YMCA camp, and I stayed on for the dish crew for the football team at my hometown college, Youngstown College then, now Youngstown State University. And I had made no decisions regarding college. I had a friend named Richard Simon who 4 years ago died of MS. He basically became my father for a while in some ways. He looked at me and said, what are you doing for college next year? I was afraid of him because he said, you're a wuss. You don't, you know, you, and I was more of a philosophical kid in a football town. And I was a swimmer, so come on. And he took me in a judo room one day, and he was only a brown belt, so, but, and we were messing around. He says, I'm really going to mess you up a little bit here because you got to learn how to get rough and take a hit and all that. Well, he ended up putting me in a chokehold, and I went unconscious. So that's prefaced to him saying, Well, you need to get your ass up there, and you need to sign up. You sign up with the football players. So I went up and asked permission. Could I sign up with you guys? And they said, yeah. I talked to the coach, and it's a funny guy. I don't want to. I can get off. He worked for $1 a year. He was one of those volunteer guys back then. And anyway, that's how I went to college. Is there something wrong with that picture? Well, here's a guy who. That's how I started school. I was ready to. Without that, what would I have done? I know exactly where I'd be. Yeah, I wouldn't even be here today. So I thank God for Richard Simon in my life. And he died. It was very sad. It was very sad. Let me move into the next category. The next category is where you have the physically present, not engaged, or it could be just not physically present at all, the single parent home. But you have an emotional presence, if you will. You have an emotional presence. An emotional presence. You know, I titled this The Uninitiated Son or The Undesired Daughter. And I know these categories break down, so stay with me. And they're hard sometimes even for me to think when I was thinking them through. But the idea of initiating your son. Let me just say something to you. Robert Lewis wrote a book called Raising a Modern Day Knight. Now, this is a very practical book. What I'm trying to do with you guys today is bring about awareness of your hearts. But when you want to talk about initiating, doing initiating type things, he's got some excellent practical stuff in here. And then he also, I'll read this to you. Because we're really the idea of how do we initiate young men into our, where's the initiation come? You get your driver's license, you graduate from high school, what is it? We're not going out and killing the bear, are we? See, again, there comes my little wimpy side. I mean, I don't. Guys, can I tell you something? I've never been hunting, okay? But let me just read this to you. He does a little bit of, he talks a little bit about Jeffrey Dahmer. Do you know who, about Jeff Dahmer? No, this is the guy that murdered how many? Yeah. His dad, Lionel Dahmer, wrote a book called A Father's Story. This is what he said. He started drifting, Dahmer writes. And so I wasn't there to see him as he began to sink into himself. I wasn't there to sense, even if I could have sensed it, that he might be drifting toward that unimaginable realm of fantasy and isolation that it would take nearly 30 years to recognize. To me, those are haunting words. I wasn't there. He began to sink into himself. He might be drifting. Without even knowing it, Lionel Dahmer has identified a process that is confirmed by experience and verified by observation. When dad is absent, boys begin to sink into themselves. They begin to drift. As Bronislaw Malinowski wrote in the National Review article, through all societies there runs a rule that the father is indispensable for the full sociological status of the child. The most important moral and legal rule is that no child should be brought into the world without a man who is guardian and protector. Let me go on to read and then I'll stop. Our culture is convulsing today because, in the words of David Blankenhorn, we have undertaken a social experiment of the most daring and untested design. It, fatherlessness, represents a radical departure from virtually all human history and experience. Only fathers can halt the drift of sons. This is a good read, practical, and it fits into that category that I'm just talking about here of the uninitiated son, and doing some initiating type things that are ceremonial. But if you aren't connected in your heart, that's just one more thing to do. Okay? But it is, even just the part on drifting, it's a good read. When I was talking to Lydia about daughters, the undesired daughters, she said to me, "Oh man, how I just so long to be seen by my dad. I just wanted to be seen by him and to have special time with him. And I needed the hugs. I needed them. But I didn't get them, so I just looked for men in my life." And then began a long, painful slide. Drift. A girl can drift too, by the way.
I don't understand this category very well.
It is hard.
How can you be emotionally present yet not?
Well, emotionally, you're physically present, but you're not engaged. Okay? There's an emotional presence in that you're not, you are acknowledging some of the things. Think about a single parent home, okay? So a mother is there, she's present, she's offering a lot of the emotional side of things, but it's a father who has to take the son and be there, be present with him, do manly things. We need to, that is not a bad thing to do manly things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard for me too, by the way. This category leaves me a little bit, I was struggling with it, so it makes more sense when I say the dad's not there. But in my case, physically present, but my dad wasn't engaged. Honestly, if you looked at our home, it was not engaged. My mother tried to be a little bit engaged with me emotionally, but not much. You can have a father, and again, you got to look at this. This is tough because the wounds of a father. By the way, we all know this. I know you know this, right? You've been told this. Dads, fathers have the most influence on both sons and daughters more than mothers. That's sociological research. Secular. Okay? Now, my great fear in bringing some of this stuff to you guys today is I don't want you to come out of here discouraged. I want you to come out of here challenged. Well, talk to me a little bit about tell me where you guys felt like you were initiated to be men. I want to hear. I mean, I'm sure there's some good stories.
I have a good example, I guess. Looking back at my life when I was a kid, it wasn't uncommon on the farm to work with other men, long side by side. And it wasn't long, by the time you're 13, 14, you could do what they could do. And that gave you a real sense of belonging, like, I can cut it.
I can cut it. Oh, that's good. Where is that today, though?
It's just not available today.
Well, we got to make it available.
I actually tried to take my son with me doing construction work when I was in the city, and I had a guy pull me aside and says, you can do that today. He says, but you better not let anybody see you. If OSHA sees you doing that,
no.
You're going to be fined and written a ticket because you're allowing child endangerment, bringing your son to work. I said, my own son? I said, it's my business. It's my job. He says, yeah, they can still drag you into court. So I thought, maybe I better not do this.
We got to get more creative. And that's creative. I mean, that's good. Take your kids' work.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind related to that is mine's a little bit similar. I grew up on a farm. And so from the time I was probably about 4 or 5, I had certain chores and responsibilities that were very clear that were entrusted to me. And if you didn't do those, you knew there were consequences. The animals died. Type of deal. Mm-hmm. That part of it, I think, provided some of the thing you're talking about.
Okay.
A sense of entrusted with responsibility from an early age.
Yeah. Okay, more. Give me more. When can you really feel alive? Give me negative stuff. You guys know any negative?
I think it's a PP&E and EP category. It holds that whole argument. Hey, I don't spend much time with my kid, but boy, when I do, it's high ball.
Thank you. That's helpful. Wow. I did my advertising. I mean, no,
I think for a lot of guys feeling
like, can you speak up a little bit? I'm having trouble here.
For a lot of guys, maybe if the father's not there to help them graduate into manhood, it can be sex or danger. So he feels that he can have an exploit. I've arrived at whatever. Or just something dangerous to prove myself. I've got to prove myself something to other guys some way, whether it's getting in a fight, racing a car, running a stoplight, whatever. There's a guy's manhood at stake. He's got to prove it somewhere.
You know what? That absolutely correct. That's one of my next points was to... the danger thing. Yeah, to do dangerous things. My friend and I, Rich Simon, we went one night, blackened our faces, and we had our other friend out in a boat out in Lake Erie. He was waiting out there for us, and we strung a bunch of cherry bombs around where all these people were, they were sleeping, and we did this whole mission thing, and we lit that puppy. We hit the lake, swam underwater. We can both swim almost 100 yards underwater. We trained. It is a long way. I was a swimmer, though, and he was tough. We get out to the boat, and wow, these things are blowing up all over the place, and it was kind of fun. I don't advise that as initiation.
So you
but,
could hunt with dynamite. Be all
right. Huh?
You could hunt with dynamite.
Maybe. John?
There's this YouTube video of these four Russian kids on top of a radio bar. I don't know if you've seen this one. In Russia, within the last year, and they're up on a 400-foot tower, and there's this four-inch or six-inch wide plank coming off of it. And this kid is walking out onto that plank, 400 feet up, not tied into anything, not, you know, just, you know, in front of his friends, but this dare standing out there, and I think he's getting initiated. Because dad is going to initiate him. He's going to stand in front of his friends and say, look, I'm a man.
You know, and I think growing up, I'm thinking of you grew up in an environment like you guys, maybe, I don't know, how many of you guys hunt in here? Okay, a lot of you guys do. It doesn't mean you have to hunt, but that is one thing you can take your son and do, right? And I think, you know, you kind of grow into your first time you fire a weapon and all that kind of stuff, and yeah.
I gave my son, when he hit, I think it was when he turned 14, from that book.
Yes, here. Yes, Raising a Modern Day Knight by Robert Lewis.
How did frame the definition of what it means to be a Christian man? It basically talked about moving courageously, reflecting passivity, and then it had certain kind of characteristics that I was hoping for. And then I didn't say a huge amount about it, but then I kind of quietly tried to live all those attributes, and it sits on his shelf. I wonder sometimes how often he looks at it.
Ask him.
He's 18 now, so I kind of need to circle back on some of that stuff. But I think giving our sons as an initiation rite, what it is to be a man, a Christian man, and telling them what that is.
Yeah.
I probably haven't done as good a job as I like to have, but I think
don't listen to the voice of the enemy. You entered into your son's life. If you were my dad, I'd be applauding you all the way to the bank, or in the bank of God.
Yeah.
Rick, go ahead.
I grew up with a stepfather. I never really knew my dad until later in life. But he stepped in like your own. Taught me how to. He was an All-American high school football player. I wasn't. But he taught me how to play every sport. He spent time with me.
What was that like for you? It touches deep places, doesn't it?
It filled a gap. Mm-hmm. And me, gave his name, and some model of Christ. Take care of us. Sorry.
What? Why are you sorry?
Just a small customer.
But he was a great model.
Wow.
And I benefited from that in many ways.
Yeah.
Especially when I finally came to the point to make a decision for Christ and begin to realize that He's adopted us and He's given us every spiritual blessing in Christ.
He has.
What analogy my dad gave me.
Yeah. As you say that, I think, as we look around and you see abandoned boys, you know, maybe in your churches, single parent moms that are struggling, it's tough. There's a friend in Tucson who has a ministry called One on One. Do you know Don? He definitely tries to pair up guys. My son paired up with a kid and would take him out doing construction on a roof, roofing a roof. This kid never roofed a roof. And you know, he had to get them all sunscreened in Arizona and worked up there. The kid was like at the end of a day on a hot day in Tucson, roofing a roof, 2,000 square foot house, not huge, but yeah, you know what. But he taught him how to do this, and that kid began to feel a little bit like a man. He doesn't have a dad. And his mom is pulling her hair out, trying to figure, what do I do with him? And so Don has this ministry. And so, yeah, wow. Thanks for that story. It's encouraging to hear that. It really is. I like the idea that this category just helps me in thinking about it. That, yeah, I'm the quality time versus quantity time type thing or that. I mean, it's really, that's not true. It's a lie. When I grew up as a young Christian, there was a lot, I just need to spend quality time. When you're there, it's like, you know, but you know what? It's both. You need the long periods of time with kids, with your kids.
I'd like to add something to this last discussion, maybe just for a little bit of balance. I have two sons, both on the opposite ends of the spectrum as far as the danger category. My oldest son, if there was a reckless way, something, that's the way he would pick.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger son wanted nothing to do with that. It's like, this is stupid. I could get killed. Let's not do this. And it was a challenge for me as their dad, and I probably learned it way too late in their lives to really do a very effective job. But I had to figure out other ways to validate my younger son, because he wasn't going to be the high school quarterback or the same team or anything like that, but he was a great artist. He was a great musician, very creative with his hands, woodworking, things like that. So it was a challenge for me to look at that aspect of his life and pull out those qualities that I felt were godly, lifelong attributes to praise him on, and say that, you know, that's important to me. That's, you're awesome at that.
How did you do that, beside words?
I guess to spend time doing some of those things with him.
Right. What was that like for you?
It was great for me, because I actually am interested in all of those things, so it was easy for me to see him excel in those things and realize that, yeah, this kid is gifted in this area. So.
Right, and it takes it back. You say bring balance, but someone else said it over here, one of you younger guys. I mean, oh, you did, Josh. The idea that we need to pay attention to how our kids are bent. They are bent in a way we can't unbend them. Not everyone's going to be the high school quarterback. Not everyone's going to go shoot the bear. You know. Let me just say this at this point. Anybody else? Other stuff going on inside of you? Because by the way, everyone's going to talk in here. Okay. You will talk. Because I'm going to ask you some things in a minute. One of the saddest stories in Scripture is about King David. As a father, he was a failure. How's that feel to hear that? You think we're being too hard on him?
God called him a man after his own heart.
Yeah, because he was willing to repent, not like Saul. You know what I mean? Saul was like, no way. I'm going to go ahead and... David's heart was soft toward God. He did repent. But let's look at the being a father. Let's look back at when... Ammon, his son, raped Tamar. And when that news got to David, what does it say? It says David was furious. Did nothing. And David did nothing. It was well known throughout the king's household that Absalom, his brother, wanted to take him out. He did nothing he waited 2 years. This is my version. It's 2 years is true. 2 years went by, nothing happened. He had Ammon killed. David did nothing in those 2 years. Do you think David may have known about that? I don't know. We don't know. But the word was out. And then Absalom goes into self-imposed exile. You guys know the story? How long was he in exile? Bible quiz. 3 years. He was in exile 3 years. Now, Joab is sort of David's rescuer. Joab is, he's the general Joab, right? And so he gets this lady or this woman to come and say she had two sons and one son killed the other son. And of course, that son needs to be put to death, but, you know, because of the family and all this, and what do you do? And so then brings the point to the King David that, you know, there needs to be a place of refuge for your son. Because you granted pardon here. Why can't you grant pardon for your son? But so David, okay, brings Absalom back, but he doesn't want to see him face to face. I don't know if I'm wrong on the years. I don't know how long did that go on, John. I just forgot. That went on for a while, the face-to-face thing. Was that the three-year deal?
No, the 3 years was in...
The exile. Anyway, so what happens there? He's living by himself. He really wants, you know, he needs to have his dad talk to him. He needs to have his dad enter in with him. So he does what Huggins and all of us in the field would call, he does signal behavior. What do you think the signal behavior was? He burns Joab's field. Right? Did I have that right? He burned his field.
He did. The two requests, he didn't respond.
Yeah. So anyway, he ends up being killed by... Absalom gets, he's trying to take the kingdom. He's going to take the kingdom. And he ends up dying. And then David is left lamenting. Here is a lament by David in Psalm 55. Listen to David's despair over one of his greatest relational disappointments. And this comes out of this book here. If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. This is Psalm 55, 12 to 14. If a foe were raising himself against me, I could hide from him. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship as we walked with the throng at the house of God. You know, Absalom's final rebellion made the pain way too great for David. He was forced to acknowledge that he was a wounded father, a father who was realizing his greatest fear, being seen as disgusting in the eyes of everyone who was important to him. Back to Psalm 55, 2 through 5. My thoughts trouble me, and I am distraught at the voice of the enemy, at the stares of the wicked, for they bring down suffering upon me and revile me in their anger. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. David was a man after God's own heart. When he saw the damage that he had done, he was broken. Contrary to the example would be Saul. Great tragedy in the home. And David, we look at that, and yet, gentlemen, I think John said it, let us not accuse one another. We are all pretty broken guys. And when you, we're going to come back this afternoon, and we'll just continue on, and what is the shift here? Help me. We're going to go to lunch in about 2 or 3 minutes, and then lunch is for what?
12:45.
And clear out of the dining room. Appreciate you guys entering in. I pray that some of this would touch into. There's another book out there that I think is a great read. How many of you have read Sacred Parenting by Gary Thomas? He's also written another series of books on sacred marriage. Is a very good read. He said, as much as I adore my children, as crazy as I feel about them, I betray them if I put their happiness and comfort over God's overall purpose in their lives and the world. Gentlemen, we need, this guy said, he's got a lot of statements like that in this book. Seriously. It's a challenge. You know, here's a real practical book. It's what your son isn't telling you. Very practical. There's a lot of practical stuff in here. 8 things you need to know about me as a son. How a boy's world looks like and feels. It's basic, but it does cover the topics. Lust, sex, dating, that kind of stuff. It does give you some stuff to look at and think about. Hopefully in the context of what I'm trying to lay the soil of the heart. So there you go. Can you pray just as we go?
Sure.